The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion. Today in the studio, we have my good friend and neighbour, Richard Ingemels. Rich, could you start by introducing yourself and where you came from and when you first started playing and what your earliest musical memories are?
Kia ora, my name's Rich Ingemels. I come from the UK, from the north of England, and first started playing music as a child. I started on the recorder at the age of 7, moving up to the flute at the age of 9. But I can remember music always being a thing in my life from a very early age. I was just thinking about this. I don't know if you remember that a tune called Oxygen, yep, by Jean-Michel Jarre.
I've got a 7-inch of it.
Yeah, and that was in the charts when I was a kid, and me and my brother had it on analog, just on a little cassette tape, and we would listen to this thing, and I would make the sound of the synthesizer. Yeah, so yeah, that whatever it is. Yeah, so I would make that. And I decided that I was actually better than the pre-recorded version. And so I pushed record and would do the tune in between the gaps where I thought it was. Anyway, so much to the horror of my brother, because then it had my, you know, my high-pitched vibratory sound on that lovely recording. So that's one of the... I can just remember music always being part of our life. Mm-hmm. Well, especially with both me and my brother. My brother is a keyboard player, and we often played stuff together.
Oh,
wow. We learnt music together.
And you've spent over a decade sort of street performing around the world and the like. And what was that time like?
Well, I would like to say it was around the world. It was like mainly in York in the UK. So, I mean, I did do a little bit of travelling, some in Ireland and you know, around England. But most of that time was spent around York, busking on the streets of York. It was a very mixed time for me. Time of, a great time of creativity when I was in a folk rock band in the late 80s, early 90s, called Rights of Man, and that was interesting. But then the busking eventually, because I realised I could, you know, make a decent living out of it, I eventually just started doing that full time, and it became not a great thing because I was just playing the same thing over and over, and I was even playing through the winters. So it became like a time of suffering for me, eventually. Once I moved to New Zealand and I found that the busking didn't really work over here, then that kind of forced my hand into doing other work, which was a great thing.
What was it about the busking that didn't work over here?
Generally people would... I mean, I did some in Auckland. People would go, "Ah, that's great, mate." But they wouldn't actually put any money in, so... That's kind of how it, because we don't really have a huge, you know, culture for that over here, so it's not something that so I mean, people obviously like it, but it's also we don't have the density of population and the amount of people that somewhere like York in the UK is, that's the second biggest tourist spot, second after London. And it goes, it doubles in size over the summer, but there's always people there, you know, throughout the year, so you can live off it. I mean, it's hard in the winter, it's a bit crazy. And I was just, I didn't want to do anything apart from play music. I wouldn't even go and work in a cafe or, you know, whatever. So I'm glad I'm not you know, I'm not there anymore in that part of my life. I've moved on from that, so that's good.
But didn't last year, didn't you do quite a fair bit around Europe with the family?
We did some, but there was no pressure. There was never any pressure. It was not, you know, because it really, you know, music and money are not, I mean, you know, they're not the same thing. So, you know, we weren't doing it for the money.
No.
And I don't think anyone should be, even though you can get money from busking, that's not really the main reason for doing it. So the main reason for doing it is because you love it, and it's the communication you get with other people, and you know, that connection, and also getting to play your stuff with in front of people rather than just, you know, in your bedroom or whatever, or in wherever you practice. So, yeah, there was no pressure whilst we were in Europe. We just did it for fun. And we actually did make money, which did really well when we were in Ireland. I was playing with my son, son Kahu, who I've taught to play the flute. And we were playing with two flutes together, playing various, you know, various tunes, including a couple of Irish tunes, and we did really well in Galway. So, yeah, that was nice. But there was never any pressure.
Nice. So. And what do you think that playing, like busking, that teaches you about how audiences and people and music works? Would you think that it makes you a different player than if you don't?
Well, it just teaches you to relax, and you can practice your stuff without having any real... any real performance pressure, I think, because half the time people are just walking by, and and also it can make you you know, perform more to grab people's attention. So you actually end up making a bit more of a show. So because you realise, actually nothing's happening here, and it's just good practice, and it, you know, it's just getting relaxed about being in front of people and playing in front of people without it being this big huge thing. I think my scariest musical moments were probably classical ones, because when I came over here to New Zealand, I had a live show with a guitarist called Gunter Herbig, and we went live on Concert FM, and it was a simple enough piece. It wasn't, you know, wasn't too technical, but it was just the fact that you could hear every single little nuance in that piece, and if I made a mistake, it was going to be on live concert radio. So there you go. It's kind of the contrast between that and going out and busking and, you know, having a bit of a blast on the street.
So what brought you to New Zealand, and how's that changed your musical ambitions at all?
So I came out to New Zealand with my now ex-wife. She was offered a job in Auckland, so that sorted my visa out here, and eventually, for one reason or another, we went our separate ways. In terms of music, there is such a rich culture with Maori music and, you know, Maori culture. Mm-hmm. There's all of that. I've just started. I'm year one at NMIT doing Te Reo Maori.
Nice.
And so that is starting to, that's definitely feels like it's coming into what I'm doing. There's a depth to that. But I think moving over here, the other thing that happened to me is that now I have a lot of children, and my time is about family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could have happened in the UK too, mm-hmm. I guess, but that's, you know, that's how it's worked out over here. And so although music's like still with me all the time and part of my life, the focus is less on me and it's more on the family. So
I mean, you do bring them on stage with you quite often.
And we do have we've got a violinist and a drummer and a guitarist, flautist amongst the children. And then we've got the youngest, I'm sure will do something too. So,
and on a slightly different tone, when you write a new song, where does it usually begin for you?
I think it often begins with a hook line, like a chorusy line. I was thinking about this because I had to prepare for this interview, so I was thinking about this. I must admit, I didn't do a lot of preparation, but I was thinking about this question, and it can come in all kinds of different ways, but I think one of the main ones is like a hook line, like a chorus line. So I've just got a new one, and it goes, I'm not making trouble, I'm just here for love. And it was just that. And then, so I was like, well, I've got that thing, and now find some chords for that. Okay, now I need to, you know, like build around that. So then I built a verse to go with that chorusy bit, and then a middle eight, because, you know, it's kind of vary the song a little bit. And that, yeah, that's how it all started, just with singing that little line. And it's not necessarily when I've got a guitar in my hand or at the piano or whatever. It could be driving or something, or you know, walking or something. Just or sometimes you wake up and you just have like a line, or someone says something and it sets you off. So I think it's often that. Sometimes I'm writing for a purpose, so I do have a couple of songs where one was I wrote for a friend who lost her husband to cancer, and I wanted to write a song for her. That's called He Has Gone. And there was things that she had said that became lines in the song. She was talking about how they spent time in Tuscany, and also, and how he used to be around the house. He was always like, you know, kicking his shoes off and always playing the guitar. And and then there was also, and they had a fig tree in the back garden, which actually just literally keeled over when he died. It just kind of went with him. Wow. So that all of those things became part of the song. So that was all material for me to use. And then obviously, because it's about loss and, it wasn't like a happy, bouncy song, really. So that was going to give me the, you know, it needed to feel quite emotional and kind of not so sad, but, you know, that kind of helped guide with how that song was written. Songs kind of have a life of their own. And then, so once you get them going, then you get a sense of whether they're finished or not, and sometimes you just know, no, that's not finished, and then you can't necessarily finish it right then. You have to come back to it or whatever. Sometimes they come out real fast and easy. Sometimes they're real tricky and can take a long time, and reworking and all the rest of it.
And do you record them much?
Yeah, so I try and record everything.
Right.
I've got a lot of songs that haven't really have only been recorded as demos,
right,
and roughly recorded. So I have an album of songs that I recorded in 2008, and also a single from, I think it's 2009 or 10, I can't remember. Those are up on up on the intraweb, whatever it's called, but I've got and I've got some stuff that I've done with various groups. So there were one group called Midweek Tonic that we always used to meet on a Wednesday night, and a friend Andrew, who played bass, who was actually an amazing guitarist too and songwriter, and then a friend from Israel called Yair, who is an incredible drummer and percussionist, and he ended up being an incredible songwriter too. We just got together every Wednesday night, and I think Andrew said, oh, it's such a Midweek Tonic, and that was like, oh yeah, okay, well, let's call it that. So we did four albums, and then eventually Yair moved to the UK, so that put a stop to that particular outfit. Then Andrew and I found another person to work with called Stu, who's a drummer and also a songwriter. And then we formed a group called Majestic Badger. But we still used to meet on a Wednesday night and do the same kind of thing. And we would record stuff. So there is stuff, there's recordings from both of those outfits which are up on the web as well.
Is this the band you go up to Levin to record with?
Yeah, so we did that with Midweek Tonic and also with Majestic Badger. We're meeting again at the beginning of November. And we get together and not really knowing how the weekend's going to go. All three of us bring a couple of songs each, and then we just kind of bash them around, and then by the end of the weekend, hopefully something, you know, has been recorded. We go up to a recording studio there called Tsunami Studio, and yeah, just hang out for the weekend and just immerse ourselves in music, and yeah, it's just
sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. And around this area, you're often playing with the Wingers, is that right?
Yeah, and that's actually an old friend of mine, who I was in a band with in the late 80s, early 90s in New York, and we did various touring and whatever. He moved over to New Zealand as well, a little bit after me, and we were both in Auckland. We did some stuff when we were in Auckland. We lost touch with each other for about 10 years. And then when I was building my tiny house, I went in with the builder, and there he was. There was Simon, known as Schluppy to me, behind the counter at ITM.
Wow.
And yeah, so we got back together, and he's playing double bass, which is what he used to do when we were street performing in the early days. And we have two other people. We have his partner Denise and banjo player Lou, and yeah, it's kind of Americana ish folky music that we play, but also we do our own originals as well, so it's a good, yeah, it's a nice platform for that.
Yeah, I've said it before to you a couple of times, it's like you can really see the chemistry between you and Schloppy, and like as a member of the audience, that it's really quite it's a beautiful thing to see, that chemistry and that kind of ease with which you all play together. It comes through well.
Yeah, it always surprises me as well, because it's like I know what he's going to do, but I don't know what it's going to be. And yeah, it's almost like we seem to move together somehow. Mm-hmm. So that new song that I was just singing, and yeah, on rehearsal last Monday, just working through it. And of course, Shoppy like just instantly had, you know, ideas for making sections work, and it kind of effortlessly seems to sink into whatever I have to offer.
Nice.
Even if I'm kind of fumbling around a bit, and he always seems to have, you know, an idea of where I'd like to go with it. So it is an amazing, yeah, it's an amazing connection. And of course all those silly times that we shared when we were young, yeah, we kind of reminisce and think about, yeah, those times on the road. We did stupid stuff as well.
You also teach music and songwriting now. How do you find that influences your own music?
Well, I think teaching really focuses you, because you have to show someone what it is that you do. So it focuses your knowledge, and also it brings in lots of different other knowledge from different places too, because everyone has their own interests, you know. People will want to learn particular songs or whatever, so it'll be songs that I might not necessarily learn, and then I've got to find out how those things work and then help them to, you know, be able to learn that. I think it's similar with songwriting too. Because you don't necessarily always think about your process and how it works. You know, how do you teach that to someone? Well, you have to start thinking about, what is this process?
And what do you think sort of learning an instrument teaches young people over the obvious musical skills?
It's like a earthing kind of earth connection, kind of bringing you into your body and but also it's, I don't know, it's getting you out of your brain and into connects us all on some primordial level.
Mm.
I sound a bit like, woo-wah or something, but yeah, you can't say what it means to people, yeah. Really. It's just so much, you know, music is so much to so many people. And to be able to have that in your life, I mean, for me, I always turn to music.
Mm.
When and those hard times, those times when I felt sad or low or whatever, I wasn't feeling good about myself, then, you know, music was always there for me. And I don't like to use the word therapy, but it's you know, so there's all of that. But then there's also all the obvious stuff of learning a skill and, you know, and that sense of achievement. And then when you can connect to other people and you can play and they're enjoying it and it lifts them, then it's like, wow, you have, that is great for a person. Mm. So,
yeah. And what sort of feedback have you had from listeners that sort of really struck you or perhaps sort of altered how you might approach things?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question and I can't think of an answer.
Okay.
I'd just like some feedback, please.
More feedback.
Just keep making music.
And yeah.
I mean, I get, you know, obviously get lots of feedback from my local fan club.
Yeah. Family and friends.
Yeah, family and friends are always there, which is just lovely.
Yeah. And but I've seen you on stage sort of just pulling songs out of your ass, really. Mm. Making stuff up or having things thrown at you, and there's a real sense of play and fun there. Is that something you enjoy? Just
yeah, I mean, it's all about having fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
and about playing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And sort of, what obstacles have you faced? Sort of that, sort of both, sort of financially or personally or whatever. And how do you think you've overcome them? And how, or what part has music played in that? Do you think
the financial obstacle that I had was kind of boxing things in terms of thinking like, oh, you need to have this to be able to do something, you need this piece of gear, you need to go to this studio, you need to, you know, before you can. So that's kind of putting limitations on yourself by thinking that you need money to be able to do things, because you don't need money to make music.
Mm-hmm.
You can make music with on a wooden box, and you know, and you can sing songs and create things with other people. And once you open yourself up to things happening, then they show up in your life.
Mm.
But if you push them away all the time, thinking you need something else first, like, I need that $30,000 desk before I can, you know, start recording or whatever, you know. So that's the kind of obstacle. I think it's just... Yeah, for me, it's been like a switch. And with time, same with time, because once you've got a family, you get real busy. It's like, oh, I'm too busy now to write any songs. I can't do any music now because I've got a family. And it's like, actually, you can, because it's like, well, you're driving in the car and then there's a song in your head. So you've just got to take that and get it down somehow and say, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this thing happen. And it's the same with everything. Otherwise, your life is just going to become a kind of drudgery of things that you have to do and kind of watered down. So it's keeping those things that are important to you in, you know, keeping them in your life. So keeping the music in there, the creativity, keeping the love in. It's like... same as a relationship, keeping that alive and making sure you have a date night. And you know, same with your music, you have a date night or date time to do music. So so we always get together with the band every week, and so there's a place to do music. But then if I'm not careful, then that can just all totally take over with other people's stuff, and it's like, I've got to make sure that I keep presenting my material in that, yeah, so that we can do some of my stuff as well as their stuff, because I'm a nice guy and I like to help people,
you know,
so, which is awesome. Helping people is awesome, I love it. But at the same time, I have my own art to express. Totally. So.
And I feel that if you don't make space for it, then the resentment builds up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In my experience anyway.
Yeah, but it's almost like, I don't know, you can do it in the most tiniest space, you know, on the most ridiculous budget. So mentally constraining yourself, I would say, is like the biggest thing that can hold people back, hold me back. And I feel like, yeah, I've had a breakthrough with that. The other issue for me was like a musical snobbery. So I, you know, wouldn't want to play with people because I'd like, didn't, you know, I thought, you know, they're not good, or I didn't like their stuff or whatever. And it's just like really judgmental. And it's like the inner critic for myself was just the same.
Mm.
And then there was a point where I think it was the point once my first marriage had broken up and I really started taking on songwriting, where I was like, it doesn't matter if it's simple, it doesn't matter if it's been done before. It's the depth of emotion and the thing that's been expressing, the thing that I'm expressing, which is important, you know. So that's the other thing. Because that stopped me doing music with a lot of people, that judgmental thing. So.
And what are you working on next, and where can people find you?
where can they find me? Next door to you, I think. That's, that's where they can find me. So at the moment, carrying on with the Wingers and keeping on writing songs, I do plan to do another songwriting workshop, which will happen in Tasman. So people are welcome to, they are welcome to send me an email if they want to get in touch. I can get in touch with them. Also, on, you can find one of my albums online on iTunes and Spotify. Also Majestic Badger and Midweek Tonic, you can find them online too. One thing that I'm doing is also starting to make lead sheets for all of the songs that I've written. So that's quite a massive job, because there's quite a lot of them. So you can find me at the open mic at Revite in Motueka. The next one will be on the 5th of October. So everyone's welcome to sing or play or whatever.
And that's every other Sunday.
That's every other Sunday. It's a very relaxed environment. It's a nice place to explore your music and feel supported. And then the Wingers will be playing at the Golden Bear in Mapua on the 10th of October. This is a Friday evening gig. You can also find my stuff online, Richard Ingemels. If you search that in iTunes and Spotify, you'll find my stuff there, as well as Majestic Badger and Midweek Tonic. And I'll be doing the music for the Playback Theatre, which is also at Revite Cafe in Motueka on the 4th of October.
Wonderful. And what is that?
It's people's stories which are played by a team of actors. So the audience says a story and the actors play it back in an improvised fashion, and I'll be doing the music along with those actors.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Rich.
Nga mihi.
Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well. Never thought it would end this way. We'll be right back.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.